Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I'm John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle. I'm joined today by Graham Davis, news editor. How are you doing, Graham?
Hello, John. Very well, thanks.
Stephen Wilmot. You're not very well because you're coughing away.
I'm going to try not to cough.
Stephen Wilmot, Companies Editor. How are you doing, Stephen?
Yeah, good, John.
Another busy week on the results front.
Absolutely.
Good, good. And Ian Smith, for the first time, who's joined us only last week and has hit the ground running. How are you doing, Ian?
Well, thank you very much for that, John. I'm fine.
Good. Well, so you're going to be talking to us in a minute about banks and insurance, which have been a prominent feature in the results section and the news this week. And today, it's not in the magazine, TSB. You can talk to us about that because that's exciting.
Big news for the challenger banks coming
big,
through.
Big news indeed. Okay, Graham, let's kick off with currencies because this is all quite interesting. Interesting. Dollar, euro approaching parity.
Yes, parity time, John.
Parity time.
Yeah, the dollar is at its strongest, or the euro is at its weakest against the dollar.
Yeah, which is it?
I don't know. I'm not sure which.
I'm not sure which it is.
But for in 12 years. Basically, the euro it continues to weaken. QE started this week. And the dollar is just powering ahead, basically.
Dollar's powering ahead, or the euro's plummeting? Well, because I mean the euro is weakening against the against sterling as well, quite markedly.
It is indeed, but the dollar is strengthening against emerging market currencies as well at the moment. So it's a bit of both.
There are clear reasons on either side, right? I mean we've got expectations that the rates are going to rise first in the US on the one hand. We've got QE.
Well, we've been hearing that for some time, but there
So there, I mean it's the forces on both sides.
But I guess euro QE is the big thing because that kicked off this week. The government
on
bond
buying. Yeah,
and they seem to be snapping up German bonds like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, the Eurozone central banks bought 3.2 billion euros worth of bonds on Monday, so they kicked off. But yeah, it seems to be German bonds they want more than anything else.
I was speaking to our new trader Nicole Elliott this week, and German bonds they're buying them in at negative rates.
Yeah.
I mean it's insane stuff.
Can't get enough of it.
Okay,
but, you know, there is signs of green shoots of recovery. You know, forecasts are now picking up for Eurozone. Don't be some growth in Eurozone this year.
Consumer sentiment is at the highest.
Consumer sentiment's rising.
2007.
You know, it's interesting that the QE could be timed. You know, maybe it's just going to be coincidence, but it could be timed just right.
And it's interesting
the recovery in the economy there.
That actually, and we'll talk about this in a minute when Ian joins us properly. But TSB's suitor is a Spanish bank.
Who would have thought?
But then, having said that, Santander was. Was the buyer of Abbey National?
Yeah, it was many. That was some years ago, though, wasn't it, John? I mean, at different times then.
Yeah, different times.
Santander was going to take over Europe then.
Well, that's true, but it kind of is. I mean, it's done. It's doing it well.
In hindsight,
Spanish banks and the Spanish economy, two different things. Interestingly, okay. So euro's weakening. Castillo's written this week something interesting that actually. Currencies and shares often move in opposite directions, which I found quite interesting. So, you know, don't buy into markets because you think the economy behind them and therefore the currency behind them is strong.
Strengthen, yeah.
You know, actually, very often it's the opposite thing that happens, you know, and we've seen that in, so, you know, the euro stocks, I actually printed out the graph that came in, it's been powering ahead, even as the euro has been weakening. And Japan, of course, is a classic example. Prime Minister, I got that wrong in an editorial recently, which was very embarrassing. Prime Minister Abe, and you should have spotted that.
Sorry, John.
Prime Minister Abe's, economic reforms in Japan. QE is obviously a big part of that, and you know, since he announced that last year, the yen has weakened considerably against the dollar in particular, and yet the Nikkei has powered ahead,
which is of course a local currency index in sterling terms, and you wouldn't have seen the gains.
Well, that's true. We've written about this quite a lot in the fund section. That, you know, if you and we've advised, as have many advisors out there, you know, if you're going to buy into a Japanese index or a Japanese fund, you know, you buy the hedged version, and presumably the same must be now true of buying into European funds as well.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, so actually that's quite interesting. So very interesting piece there from Chris, who's a great economic theorist and actually a proper economist. And we're going to come on to that in a minute, aren't we, Graham? Because we're going to talk about forecasting. Because actually, in fact, it was the euro that, what was the stat you gave me earlier?
Yeah, in December, just one out of 32 Eurozone economists polled by the Financial Times said that the euro would be worth the same as a dollar during 2015.
In December. Not that long ago.
Two and a little bit months ago, one out of 32 only one out of 32 thought they would get to parity, and now we're almost there.
And at that point, we knew that the European economy was weak. We knew that QE was coming, and still only one economist managed to forecast what has actually transpired, pretty much. This is why I mentioned that we consider Chris, and Chris would consider himself a proper economist, because he would argue that the job of an economist is not to forecast, but to give you the range of scenarios and to help you understand how the many moving parts of the global economy actually work together. And I think, Chris does a fantastic job of that. And, this piece about the relationship between currencies and share prices is very, very interesting indeed. And he concludes by saying, and I would encourage you to read the piece, you should not buy shares, but invest because you have a view about exchange rates.
And should we be worried about the US? I mean, is the US economy as strong as we think?
So retail sales figures have come out. Is it today?
Just today, yeah.
And they're not good?
Not good. Retail sales fell 0.6% in February, and that's the second straight monthly decline. That hasn't happened since 2009. Mm. Yeah, there's been snowstorms and some mitigating factors, but the general sense is maybe that the US economy is slowing down a little bit.
But they had snow last year. Big snowstorms
last year.
Snow every year. In fact... I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent here, because a couple of weeks ago we did the Supersize Returns Part 2. Mm. So we've got a great writer over in the US, Todd Wenning, who occasionally contributes to us. And one of the companies he picked out was a snowplow manufacturer. Going great guns.
Well,
they're doing brilliantly. Don't think there's a big market for them in the UK. But maybe in Scotland. In Scotland. Who knows? Should we be worried about the US? I mean, they've come off their highs. The S&P 500 has come off its highs. The FTSE 100 came off its highs quite sharply.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. More worries about Greece? Because that's not quite as...
Oh, John, we said we weren't going to talk about Greece. Greece is still an issue out hanging over Europe, but the Eurozone equities are storming ahead. So,
there's been no sign of weakness from the Euro Stoxx 50, as I mentioned. No sign of weakness from the Nikkei, which we've already talked about. So, it's quite interesting. Which can only lead one to conclude that are we in a currency war again? Is this a currency war? Are we now in a situation where currencies are being deliberately weakened to back up the exporting power of the
country? It's one of the oldest tricks in the book, isn't it?
It is.
Is the US? Everyone thinks the US interest rate rise is nailed on now, but is it necessarily? There's a meeting next week. People think it's going to happen, but this strong dollar, whilst on the face of it may seem a good thing, it's going to hurt US industry at some point.
Yeah, you'd think so.
And do they want it to strengthen even more?
You'd think so. Who knows?
Interesting stuff.
Who knows? Anyway, I'm checking out European holiday destinations at the moment.
Yeah,
I've never seen this is as cheap as I can ever remember it. It's amazing. Apple, the watch.
Watch out.
The long-anticipated watch. Are you going to be buying one?
No.
Stephen?
Well, I have a fondness for new technology, John.
It's neither Stephen or I even have iPhones. So, Ian, have you got an iPhone?
I have not got an iPhone.
So you're not going to be buying a watch either?
Apparently it doesn't work underwater, so I'm not going for it.
Oh, you like going underwater?
Well, any watch that doesn't work underwater is not worth its salt to me.
John, you have an iPhone. You're the only one of us who could actually use one of these.
Well, I can't, because I've got an iPhone 4. And it only works with a 5 upwards. So, I won't be getting a watch. I have been meaning to buy a new watch for a while. But I'll be looking at the £8 Casio Digital Special because I need something that I can smash about. And I don't want a £300 watch that's going to break.
Even if you check your email on it, John?
Checking email is something I want to stop doing so much. It's not a good thing. I don't know. I mean, I think we're getting a bit too, caught up in all this technology, this wired world where, you can post your status wherever the hell you are, and
interesting to see if Apple can crack it, because they've redrawn the boundaries in other parts of the technology market, but they're shifting into sort of fashion a bit now.
I think Theron Mohammed, who covers the tech sector, and I don't think he's particularly impressed with the watch, but as he rightly pointed out before we came in here, I think a lot of people will still buy it.
Yep.
They might be disappointed with it, but I think Apple will get it right in the future.
And you don't have to have a bullish view on the watch to think that Apple's a buy. I guess that's the underlying point.
Well, exactly, yeah. Because again, the rest of its products.
It's got a strong franchise anyway.
It has a very strong franchise. Its phones are ubiquitous. It's MacBook.
Apart from this room.
Apart from here. this is an IC phenomenon. We have marks on this before. The Macs, its actual computers are coveted and they're good. They're good products. People love them. So, we still think they're a buy. Huge amounts of cash, not expensively rated as a share. So, the watch is a sideshow, I guess we're saying.
But it's an amazing option, I suppose, on the share price. Like if it takes off, then that does bring Apple into a whole new market, and you don't have to believe in it to think that the shares are worth buying. But it's a nice option.
Well, that's true.
Optionality. Well, that's true. Broker speak would have it.
Mm. I'm pretty sure we said the same thing about the Google Glass, and that option didn't work out to very much at all.
Mm, but I guess that's the nature of technology groups. Their innovation.
We still like Apple anyway, so I just don't think it looks very nice either. It's not the most pretty watch I've seen, so whatever.
You stick with the Casio, John.
I'll stick with your Casio.
Beautiful Casio. Yeah. Famous for its aesthetics.
So yeah, actually talking to Casio, Japanese company.
Good segue.
Mm. So a lot of takeovers coming through at the moment. So we've talked about TSB, or we've mentioned TSB.
Yep.
We'll talk about it properly in a minute. But some Japanese companies, despite the weak currency, are buying into UK businesses, which is interesting because presumably, relative to where their currencies have been historically, they must be uber expensive at the moment. Domino Printing Sciences, which has been snapped up by Brother.
Brother, indeed, £1 billion bid.
Yeah.
Which seemed pretty knockout. I don't think anyone else had considered that Domino was a target.
Good company.
I suppose the background is that it prints these smart barcodes, doesn't it?
It prints all sorts of stuff. I mean, industrial printing, basically. Industrial labeling type solutions.
Which apparently is more complex than it sounds.
It is massively complex. In fact, there was a company this week. Now, I'm going to segue into something else. My friend works for a company called Tarsus. And he runs... Which had its results this week, and very good they were too. And it runs a few big business-to-business conferences, one of which is Label Expo. And my friend is the publisher of Label Expo and the labelling magazines, and he was approached once by Have I Got News For You? Because they wanted to use Labels and Labelling International as their publication of the week. And he told them, clear off. This is big business, labelling, don't mock labelling. Don't take labelling lightly. This is huge.
Mm.
And he's right.
And in the Amazon world.
Absolutely.
Bigger business by the year.
Indeed. So Tarsus has obviously benefited, but Domino is in the same kind of business as well, really. Big takeover there.
Big takeover big premium as well.
Big premium. And then, of course, we had Optos a couple of weeks ago, which is being bought by Nikon.
Nikon, yeah. The optical imaging business, Optos.
Yeah, Optos is really interesting. I hadn't really thought about what it did until I had a look earlier. And it does the retinal imaging, which I only had for the first time a few years back. They take a photo of the back of your eye.
Mm.
And then you see this.
In the opticians, yeah.
You've had it done?
Yeah.
It looks like a planet or something. Mm. It's mad. Have you had it done?
No. What did you have it done for?
Just a random eye test.
Yeah,
it's crazy. But they're looking for, signs. They can tell all sorts of things by looking at the back of your eye. Not just about the health of your eyes, but about the health of you. And I was very pleased to say that Tom was healthy.
Maybe Stephen's too young to have that done.
Well, let's not get ageist about it.
Okay.
But one notable thing about Domino printing this week was that it was a bit of a boost for Domino's pizza share price.
I saw that in the Evening Standard.
Shares went up about 6 or 7% on the day. Some poor people thought that Domino's pizza was being bought by Brother.
I despair. I despair. That is truly worrying.
Yeah.
That is truly worrying. We couldn't believe it was true. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
It's a fat finger issue, maybe. I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I think, but you know, this is really worrying. You know, going back to what we at the IC preach and the core purpose, you know, you've got to do research. You can't just buy because someone says, oh, so and so's being taken over. Quick,
Domino's
get in there.
Bought.
You can't buy because so and so said buy. I mean, this is not how you should invest.
No.
This is what gives investing a bad name. This is why some people equate it to gambling, which it isn't if you do it properly. Talking of responsible investing, I think it's something that a lot more people need to be considering these days, given that we are approaching Pension Freedom Day.
Pension Chaos Day.
A lot more private investors, private individuals are going to be given much greater control of how their pension is invested. And obviously that's something we've started to see in terms of the actual companies who provide pensions and are in the pensions business, which is what you've been writing about this week, isn't it, Ian?
Definitely have, yeah. I mean,
who have we had?
So this week we've had Prudential. Obviously, their results overshadowed by the departure of their CEO, Tidjane Thiam.
Good pronunciation.
Thank you very much. And also Aviva's and Friends Life results. Those ones slightly overshadowed by the Aviva's purchase of Friends Life to come. So, you know, we've had results that maybe fewer people have looked at than normal. But I think the big thing for the life insurers is how they can rebalance their business away from individual annuities to bulk annuities.
Yeah, because this is the thing. So, I mean, basically, annuities have not been very attractive for quite some time.
Yeah, low government gilt yields have fed through to pretty bad pricing for customers.
So the general view is that given the option, most people opt not to have annuities.
Yeah, and even on the front page of the FT today, there's the stories come around ahead of next week's budget that perhaps this freedom, pensions freedom or pensions chaos, will be extended to even more people that have actually bought an annuity.
Because they can trade them in.
Years, potentially might be able to trade them in, which would be further bad news for the life insurers, who probably thought it was bad enough.
Yeah, they seem to be doing okay. I mean, you know, I mean, there were some casualties when the policy was first announced. Just retirement
and partnership assurance.
Partnership assurance got absolutely hammered.
The specialists,
but the generalists of Aviva, Prudential are doing okay.
Yeah, and I think that kind of speaks to how much people are going to ditch annuities when we get to Pension Freedom Day. The surveys show that people really aren't aware of the freedom they have, or they're not aware of the government guidance service that's been put in place to kind of give them guidance at that point. So we just don't know. A lot of people will probably still go down the annuities route. So in their results, I think Aviva made reference to the fact that their annuity business has not fallen by as much as they thought it was going to, or fallen as much as it had in the wider industry. Different insurers affected differently. As I say, some of them also have these bulk annuity business as well that they're looking to kind of take up some of the slack. So that's where they do these kind of bulk purchases of annuities from companies, or kind of bulk insurance of pensions or obligations.
So like big company pension schemes like the one we work for example.
Yeah, exactly. If they want to kind of ensure their pension promises that they're making to their employees, they can take our big insurance contract with one of these providers. Prudential's big in this market, for example, and that's helping it to balance out the loss of business in its UK life.
So, I mean, talk to me also about the Friends Life deal.
Yeah, the question is, why is it buying someone in what is quite a crowded UK life market, especially given the regulatory headwinds that we've discussed? Yes, but they try to argue that there are good synergies there, that certain, especially when it comes to the corporate pensions market that we just discussed, they believe that different for those companies cater to different parts of the market. For example, better with SMEs or better with large companies.
Okay. So you think it's a pretty decent deal then?
I think time will tell. It's quite hard, you know, because obviously it's very easy to talk up synergies. In reality, that kind of a business that's come through from pensions reform since 2012, where all companies had to give a pension scheme to their employees, that market is quite lumpy. It's quite difficult to see exactly the companies that are benefiting because the contributions being made are still very low. So the kind of the fees, the income that can be generated is still quite variable.
I think I've got a couple of pensions with it. Prudential. They're much more internationally spread, aren't they? Is it? I mean, this must be another thing that protects someone like them as a generalist versus someone like just retirement or partnership assurance, which are much more UK focused.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of Prudential's great strengths, especially its Asia business, which has risen strongly again. I mean, Mr. Tian went out on a really strong set of results, actually. So the kind of temporary loss in the share price on his departure probably doesn't do justice to the results that he left.
And he had a lot to do with this strategy
over,
as well. Didn't
over a third of operating profits are from Asia. So
he has been a key man driving this.
Yeah, he shepherded them, you know, through the financial crisis, and he's driven this growth. US life business is also doing really well, and that's where the heir apparent, Mike Wells, who's the head of their US CEO, is likely, who's been tipped to take over. So they've got good divisional heads, and I think that will, you know, I think people can probably overreact to the departure of the CEO.
I mean, looking at the Pru versus Aviva, I mean, it's an interesting, you get this in a lot of sectors, don't you? Two FTSE 100 giants. Pru is very much the growth story. Aviva is the kind of the laggard, where there's a kind of recovery story, trades at a discount to the Pru. I mean, we have the Pru's shares on a buy and Aviva's on a hold. And that has proven to be the right call. So, you know, for the past few years. But it's a bit like AstraZeneca and GlaxoSmithKline in pharmaceuticals, or Land Securities in British Land in property. There are two giants, and they're quite different investment propositions.
What are we saying now about Pru? I mean, given the change of management that's on the way.
Yeah, I think we're saying don't overreact. You know, as Stephen says, we've still got them on a buy. They've got this really kind of profitable partnership with Standard Chartered in Asia, where their products are distributed via Standard Chartered branches, and that's producing them a lot of new sales. We're saying don't overreact. The divisional CEOs are really good, and the results have been very strong.
Okay.
So we don't see too many reasons to be fearful.
Good stuff. Standard Chartered, not having such a good time, though.
That's a really interesting point. I mean, it does... These results do beg the question: Why is Standard Chartered having such a terrible time? But you know, it's distributing Pru's products, and that seems to be going great guns.
But that must be one small part.
But I suspect it's the problems in Korea that are pretty dragging down Standard Chartered.
Yeah. So. Let's talk about banks. So, Ian, first week in the job, and a busy
and everything's
one.
Going on.
And
yeah,
it's all
yeah,
kicking
yeah.
off.
My intro is pretty full at the moment, I have to say.
So TSB, let's start. Let's start with Virgin, because that was a nice sort of leisurely start to the week.
Yeah,
Challenger Bank, yeah. First results, they were all right.
They were good. I mean, they've got good growth in their loan book, good growth in their credit card business. Yeah, we think that's a strong company. We think they've got a capacity further to grow. Obviously, it's the old Northern Rock business. But yeah, I think to tie all the Challenger Bank stories together, it's just kind of story of successful IPOs. You know, it's not surprising that Shawbrook are going down that route as they've announced today.
And Aldermore floated this week as well, and the shares jumped quite sharply on IPO.
Because obviously they've seen, you know, what's happened in the case of Virgin Money, and they've seen today what happened in the case of TSB. Very successful times for those banks.
So let's talk about TSB, because you know it's been on the market for 15 minutes. I think your headline was on your 15
yeah,
minutes, and that's
yeah,
that.
15 minutes.
Thank
of
you
fame.
Very much.
Well, I was I spoke to a broker who said TSB RIP, which was quite a nice one too. But yeah, I mean that's just a very short-lived. Time for TSB there. But,
so we think this is going to happen then. It's gone, basically.
It looks like it. The board have said they're going to accept it at that price. So
Lloyds, which owns half the shares, has said it's inclined to
Yeah,
accept,
Lloyds has this regulatory deadline that they have to get rid of their stake by the end of the year. So
it suits them. For them. Yeah.
I mean, the question mark on that deal is, would there be any kind of rival bidder? If you don't think there will be, and perhaps it looks unlikely at the moment, then we think those shares are pretty full value now. You know, they went up. They're up 25% almost on the day as a result of the announcement. So that's somewhere where we've kind of said perhaps it's time to take your profits.
So we look all right on this one, don't we? We tipped them as a buy summer last year, just after they floated,
on the basis that it was very well capitalised and had good scope to grow. Actually, the same basis on which we've put Virgin Money on a buy.
The headline is a good one: born too cheap. I think that's been borne out. There were some quibbles from readers, I have to say, on that one, who thought that, like all banks, it was risky and we shouldn't be touching it with a barge pole. Hangover from the banking crisis. What is it that's attracting this bid attention from the Spanish suitor?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the official market announcement suggested that they were attracted by the dynamic market. You know, perhaps all this momentum that we've been talking about amongst the challenger banks.
But that would be okay. UK market.
I mean, not
becoming
just a, not just the challenger banks. I mean, we saw very good UK results for UK retail and commercial banking results from RBS and Lloyds as well. So I mean, if you strip out the investment banks, the legacy fines, and so forth, and actually the old banks look like they're doing really well in the UK too. So if you just take that bit of the business, which TSB effectively is, as is Virgin Money and Aldermore, I think as well. Though I think Aldermore's more into property. You know, it's the UK. We get back to the UK recovery story,
which we talked about last week.
Yeah, it's a good credit environment, right? You know, for example, Virgin Money are looking at what they can make from credit cards, and they're thinking in terms of how they can grow their mortgage book as well. I mean, they're seeing
real incomes are starting to rise. Yeah. All the kind of things which make banks optimistic about lending.
The car industry is motoring. Excuse the pun. Motoring, and a lot of that is on finance. The house builders are going great guns. You know, they're selling everything they can build. You know, so someone's got to fund that. Yeah, the UK recovery is a strong story still, which is great. But yeah, I mean, just going back to the house builders, Stephen, you've written something interesting this week on special dividends, and the house builders are one sector which is returning cash to shareholders at a rate of knots. But you're not convinced.
Well, no, I'm.
Well, the cash is cash.
The cash is cash, exactly.
But not so special.
And as I point out, 87% of UK shareholder returns since 1900 have come from dividends. So
not necessarily special ones, though.
Not necessarily special. Yeah, regular and special. Mm. But I guess I was just making the point that actually these special dividends are a sign of caution as much as they are a sign of optimism. Because if you were actually optimistic, you would be
reinvesting in your business.
One thing you might be doing would be reinvesting in your business, but another thing you might be doing would be up your regular dividend. Instead, you've got these companies, and actually the house builders are a slightly different story here, but a lot of the special dividends we've seen from like Foxtons yesterday,
which is having a torrid time,
and very sensibly it didn't commit to I can't quite remember the numbers, but it said something about, something like, oh, well, pay out 30-40% of our profits as regular dividends and excess cash, and we'll return as special dividends. And a lot of companies are particularly very volatile, companies in cyclical markets. And I was looking through the last couple of weeks of results, and Synthoma, Bodycut, Elementis ordered exactly the same thing. Synthoma actually half a year ago at its interims laid out a new dividend policy very similar to Foxton's, i.e. we'll pay out this proportion of our profits in regular dividends and excess in specials. I mean, basically it's this, that after the financial crisis they're very wary of over-promising, I think, is what's going on.
Yeah, we talked about this last week before. The last thing you want to do as a chief exec is cut your dividend.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is cut your dividend. And one way you can get around that whilst still, returning decent amounts of cash is to have a fairly modest, and we're talking like, I think these engineers, they have dividend yields of sort of 2%-ish. But then, you double that when you've got excess cash, which is, is not a bad approach. I'm not criticizing the approach at all. It is actually a sign of caution as much as anything else. ITV is another example. We had, we've had special dividends for 3 years. So, how special is that?
Indeed. And also, once you get that cash back, you've got to work out what you want to do with it.
Right. And the point I made is that, so you could buy more shares in Foxtons.
Which I think is...
But why would you do that when they're telling you we don't want the cash? It's a bit of a funny one.
It is. Having said that, if you'd have taken the special dividends and reinvested them in house builder shares, you would be laughing.
The house builders is a different one. I mean, that's a really interesting example because that's a market which is clearly undersupplied. So the other example, of course, is non-life insurers, Hiscox, Lancashire, Brit Amlin. They're all announcing big special dividends because they say we can't invest the cash profitably. It's a, it's a really weak pricing environment for insurance premiums. So, but it's completely the opposite with house building. They've got very strong pricing. Everyone agrees that the nation needs more homes. So you wonder, why don't they just use this cash to build as much as they can? And it's a fair question, but I think the answer is, sorry, John.
No, carry on. I had an interesting view on this. No, carry on.
Well, I was going to say, I think they want to prove discipline. They we're still in a world where people remember, you know, the banks going belly up in the financial crisis, and indeed the house builders going belly up. Mm. And even though that's, what, 7 years ago,
they still
haven't earned back the credibility, I guess, of the market.
I'm not convinced by that. I heard a different view, which sounded sort of a little bit more plausible, which is that they want to control the supply.
Well, I suppose
and protect their margins.
Yes, I know that's also
they could
point.
Build twice as many homes, but they're not going to get the same margin on it.
Right,
I mean, because it would have a massive impact on pricing.
Yes, I mean they also obviously have no interest in flooding the market.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's they realise, I suppose, that even though everyone agrees that Britain is undersupplied with homes, there's only so fast that the banks can lend, that they can get stuff through the planning process. So there are all sorts of sort of short-term barriers as well that mean that they can't just suddenly, you know, use all this cash to build homes. They could use it to buy land, of course, but they're not doing that either. They're saying, okay, well, actually, we've got 6 years of supply. Basta. Mm. We'll return the cash instead.
Okay, well, there you go. There was another company this week that announced a sort of special dividend. Wasn't there, Graham? We had a good chuckle about this one.
We did have a good chat about this, yes.
Marks & Spencer.
M&S.
Now, that's not a normal special dividend. It's not just any dividend.
It's an M&S dividend,
it's
John.
It's an M&S gift card style dividend. So they're going to... They've got this scheme. And I thought this was a joke when I read it. But it's not April the 1st.
So. You came round, John. Your thinking came round, didn't it?
It kind of made sense because, you know, it suddenly occurred to me that, you know, so if I'm receiving dividends, I want to buy more shares, as we talked about, because we like the effect of compounding over time. That's where, as you pointed out, Stephen, you know, the majority of long-term returns on shares come from, dividends and reinvested dividends.
Exactly.
But if you are, say, a pensioner and you want income instead, and we know there are a lot of people who do want income.
Presumably there will be even more after the pension reforms.
And there will be more after the pension reforms. You know, you're not getting a lot out of a bank account. Annuities are not especially attractive. M&S pay a 3.5% dividend or thereabouts. And actually this gift card gives you...
But what if you do your shopping in M&S, John?
Which a lot of pensioners do, which often baffles me because I think M&S is quite expensive. And I think, you know... Aren't you people supposed to be living on a shoestring?
But, those days are over. It's the young who are poor now, John.
The young. Let's not get into intergenerational politics right now. But yeah, you know, a lot of M&S shareholders are M&S customers. They do their shopping at M&S. You know, they buy food in M&S. And if they can get an extra 10% on their dividend, well, that's not 10% yield, 10% in terms of the monetary value. That's actually not that bad when you think about it.
So for £900 with the dividends, they can get a £1,000 gift card.
I was horrified when I heard this initially. Mm. And then the more I thought about it, I thought, actually, this is quite a good thing. That bad at all.
You did. You turned, John, overnight. Your opinion of this turned quite dramatically.
It did. Maybe I have an inherent bias against Marks & Spencer for some bizarre reason. But I think this is all right. I think this is quite interesting.
Their broker says he wants to do it for other companies.
The registrar, Equiniti.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess there are only so many companies that you can do it for. But not so bad. Tesco. Not so bad at all.
Tesco,
Sainsbury, Domino's Pizza, Diageo. Yeah, that would get my vote. Anyway,
let's leave it there.
Yeah, we'll tell the overproof rum story another time.
Yeah, save that.
Okay, there's plenty more in the magazine this week. We haven't even talked about the cover feature. Daniel's not well today, so we can't do that. He's written about how, in fact, cyclical engineers whilst the rest of the world is recovering, they're actually struggling with some up and down markets, and actually what they are resorting to is what we call self-help. So they're actually making themselves fitter, leaner businesses to really cope with the demands of the business cycle. And Daniel's done a great piece on that. We've got a high yield system update written by James Norrington, which is working. The high yield system, which has been around for decades, is working again. We've got an outside contributor, Zach Meir, who's written something on small cap charting. We're not going to talk about anything in the personal finance section because we've got a separate podcast that does that now. Recorded that this morning, and that's going great guns. Get in there, have a listen to that. And all the usual wonderful stuff, including many, many pages of results again. Well done, Stephen and Ian, in your first week. It's a baptism of fire.
And I've enjoyed it.
And you've enjoyed it. That's it. That's it. So well done, chaps. It's been very, very challenging, but we've got there. So lots to read the magazine this week. £4.50, all good news agents. And we will catch up again next week. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.